Chapter 10. News from Yalta. At the time the disaster befell Nikanor Ivanovich, the office of the Varieties Financial Director Rimsky, not far from number 302B on the Sadovaya, contained two people, Rimsky himself and the Varieties Manager, Varyonika. The door opened, and an usher dragged in a thick stack of freshly printed supplementary posters. On the green sheets, large red letters spelled out, "Today and every day at the Variety Theatre, in addition to the regular programme, Professor Volant. Seances of black magic, followed by its complete exposure." Stepping away and admiring the poster, Varyonika immediately ordered the usher to send all copies to be posted. "Nice and striking," Varyonika noted once the usher left. "Well, I don't like this Herald scheme in the least," Rimsky grumbled. "He should have shown me the magician at least. If you've seen him, hell knows where he dug him up." It turned out that Varyonika, just like Rimsky, had not seen the magician. Yesterday, Stiopa ran to the financial director with the draft of the contract already prepared, immediately had the contract rewritten and the money issued, and the magician gave them the slip, and no one had seen him but Stiopa himself. Rimsky took out his watch, saw that it read 2:05, and became absolutely livid. "Really now? Likhodiev had called around 11, said that he'd be there in half an hour, and then not only did he not show up, but he also disappeared from his apartment." Just then, a woman walked into the office, wearing a uniform jacket, a visor cap, a black skirt and trainers. She extracted a small white square and a notebook from the small pouch on her belt and asked, "Where's Variety Superspeed Telegram for you? Sign here." Varyonika scribbled something in the woman's notebook, and as soon as the door slammed shut behind her, he opened the square. Having read the telegram, he blinked a few times and handed the square to Rimsky. The telegram contained the following: "Yalta to Moscow, Variety. Today, 11:30, brown-haired man, psychiatric case, dressed nightshirt, trousers, no boots, arrived police station, calling self Likhodiev, Variety Director. Wire Yalta, criminal investigator, where Director Likhodiev." "Well, I'll be," Rimsky exclaimed.
"A false Dmitri," Varyonika said, and began to talk into the receiver. "Telegraph, Varieties count. Please accept a superspeed. Ready? Yalta, criminal investigator, Director Likhodiev in Moscow, Financial Director Rimsky."
Receiver in hand, Varyonika was wondering who else he could call when the same woman who brought the first wire walked in and handed him a new envelope. Opening it hurriedly, Varyonika read the print and whistled. "Now what?" Rimsky asked, twitching nervously. Varyonika handed him the telegram silently, and the financial director saw the words: "Please believe thrown Yalta Volant hypnosis. Wire criminal investigator. Identity verification. Likhodiev."
"You spoke to him a little after 11 on the phone, right?"
the manager began in utter confusion. "It's ludicrous," Rimsky cried piercingly. "Whether I talked to him or not, he couldn't be in Yalta now. It's ludicrous." Whoever was sending the telegrams from Yalta was either an impostor or a lunatic. But here was the oddity. How did the mystery man from Yalta know about Volant, who had only arrived in Moscow yesterday? How did he know of the connection between Likhodiev and Volant?
"Where's this Volant staying, devil take him?" Rimsky asked.
Varyonika got in touch with the Travellers Bureau immediately and, to Rimsky's complete surprise, announced that Volant was staying in Likhodiev's apartment. Dialing the number of Likhodiev's place, Varyonika listened to the dense signal from the receiver for a long time.
"No answer at the apartment," Varyonika said, hanging up. "Could try again, I suppose."
He did not finish. The very same woman appeared in the doors. As both Rimsky and Varyonika rose to meet her, she pulled a dark sheet out of her bag instead of the usual white one. Rimsky took possession of the sheet first. Handwritten black lines stood out clearly against the dark background of the photographic paper.
Proof, my handwriting and signature. Wire confirmation set up, secret observation Volant, Likhodiev.
Rimsky took out a stack of paper from his desk and began to meticulously compare the thick left-slanting letters in the photogram to letters from Stiopa's memoranda.
It's his handwriting, the financial director said firmly at last.
Valionika raised his hands as though crucified and kept exclaiming, I don't understand, I do not understand.
Meanwhile, Rimsky was looking out the window and thinking tensely about something. He would need to invent ordinary explanations for extraordinary events. Narrowing his eyes, the financial director imagined Stiopa boarding some sort of incredible super-fast airplane in his nightshirt and without boots at about 11:30. And then again, Stiopa, also at 11:30, already standing in his socks on an airfield in Yalta. Perhaps it was not Stiopa who had called him from the apartment. No, it was Stiopa. And even if it hadn't been Stiopa today, it certainly had been Stiopa no earlier than last night, when the man came to this very office with his idiotic contract. And even if he had left last night, he would not have gotten there by noon today. Or would he?
How far to Yalta? Rimsky asked.
Veronica shouted.
Thought of that. It's about 1,500 kilometres to Sevastopol by railroad. Add about 800 more for Yalta, less by air, of course.
Right. Trains were out of the question.
But what then? A fighter plane?
The fighter plane's got nothing to do with it. After all, it's written right here that he came to the police station at 11:30, while the telephone conversation in Moscow took place at...
Oh, horror.
It had been 11:20.
So what does this come out to?
If one assumed that immediately following the conversation, Stiopa dashed to the airfield and reached it in, say, 5 minutes, which, by the way, is equally unthinkable, then it turns out that the airplane, taking off instantly, covered over 1,000 kilometres in 5 minutes. This cannot be. And therefore Stiopa cannot be in Yalta.
Rimsky composed himself as well as he could, picked up the receiver and said,
Super urgent connection to Yalta, please.
But the connection to Yalta did not come. Rimsky hung up and said,
Line is down. Rotten luck.
Pondering a while, he picked up the receiver with one hand and began writing down all that he said with the other.
Take a superspeed wire. Variety, yes. Yalta. Criminal investigator, yes. Today, around 11:30, Likhodiev spoke me, telephone, Moscow. Stop. After this, did not come to work. Cannot be located by phone. Stop. Confirming handwriting. Stop. Taking observation measures, specified artist. Stop. Financial director, Rimsky.
He neatly folded all the telegrams and his own text into a stack. Placed the stack in an envelope. Sealed it. Wrote a few words on it, and handed it to Veronika, saying, Take it you-know-where right now, Ivan Savayevich, personally. Let them sort it out.
Now that is truly smart,
thought Veronika, placing the envelope in his briefcase. Then, just in case, he dialed Stiopa's home number one last time, listened carefully, and then began to wink and grimace mysteriously and happily. Rimsky craned his neck.
Could I speak to the artist Volant, please?
Veronika asked sweetly.
They're busy,
came a rattling voice from the receiver.
Who is this?
Veronika, manager of the Variety.
Ivan Savayevich,
the receiver cried joyfully.
Terribly pleased to hear your voice. How are you?
Merci, said Veronika in astonishment. And who am I speaking to?
His assistant
and interpreter, Kurovyov.
The receiver sputtered.
Completely at your service, my dearest Ivan Savayevich. Direct me as you please, so?
Pardon me, but does Stefan Bogdanovich Likhodiev happen to be home right now?
Alas, no,
the receiver cried.
He left.
Where to?
For a drive in the country.
What? A drive? When's he coming back?
He just said he'd go for a breath of fresh air and come right back.
Right,
Varyonika said, at a loss.
Merci. If you would be so kind, please tell Monsieur Volant that his performance will be during the third segment today.
Got it, of course, right away, urgently, unquestionably.
We'll relay the message.
Well, of course, I told you,
the manager yelled excitedly.
Forget Yalta, he went for a drive in the country.
Shall I take the envelope anyway?
Absolutely, Rimsky replied.
The door opened again to reveal the same woman. This time, the telegram contained the words,
Thanks. Confirmation. Urgently transfer 500 rubles via criminal investigator. Flying Moscow tomorrow. Likhodiev.
He's gone mad, Varyonika said weakly.
As for Rimsky, he jingled his key, took the money out of the fireproof safe, counted out 500 rubles, made a phone call, gave the money to a courier, and sent him to the telegraph office.
Forgive me, Grigory Danilovich,
Varyonika said, not believing his eyes.
If you ask me, you shouldn't be sending the money.
It will be returned, Rimsky replied quietly. But he will answer in full for this little picnic.
And pointing to Varyonika's briefcase, he added, Go, Ivan Savayevich. Don't delay. And Varyonika ran out of the office with his briefcase.
He went down to the first floor, saw a very long line by the box office, and found out from the cashier that she expected the show to sell out within the hour, as people started pouring in the moment they saw the supplementary posters. He ordered the cashier to hold on to 30 of the best seats in the boxes and orchestra, jumped out of the box office, and, fighting off annoying free ticket hounds, dove into his office to grab his cap. Just then the phone rang.
Yes!
Varyonika shouted.
Ivan Savayevich,
the receiver inquired.
Don't fool around, Ivan Savayevich, but listen. Don't take the telegrams anywhere and don't show them to anyone.
Who's this?
Varyonika roared.
Quit your tricks, mister. You'll pay for this.
He yelled some other threat and then fell silent, sensing that no one at the other end was listening anymore. Varyonika ran out, slammed the door shut behind him, and headed out to the summer garden through a side door. Running past the shooting gallery, Varyonika came to the light blue restroom building. The manager was upset by the fact that, even in the pre-storm dusk, it was possible to see that the walls had already been written on with charcoal and pencil.
Oh, what the...
The manager began, and then heard a voice behind him purr.
Is that you, Ivan Savayevich?
Varyonika gave a start, turned around, and saw a short, fat man standing behind him. The man's face looked oddly feline.
Yeah, it's me,
Varyonika replied unpleasantly.
Very, very pleased,
the cat-like fatso replied in a squeaky voice, and taking a sudden swing, he punched Varyonika in the ear so hard that the cap flew off the manager's head, disappearing without a trace in the toilet. The fat man's blow caused the entire restroom to light up with shaky light for a moment, and thunder followed from the sky. Another flash came, and a second man appeared before the manager. Short, but with an athletic build, fiery red hair, a fang protruding from his mouth, and a walleye. This second one was apparently a lefty, for he dealt the manager another one in the left ear. Again, the sky rumbled in response, and a rainstorm came crashing down on the wooden roof of the restroom.
What's in the briefcase, parasite?
The one resembling a cat shouted piercingly.
Telegrams? And weren't you warned over the phone not to take them anywhere? I'm asking you, weren't you warned?
I was warned,
the manager replied, gasping.
Hand over the case, vermin,
the second man cried, and tore the briefcase out of Varyonika's shaking hands. Together, they took the manager under the arms, dragged him out of the garden, and dashed off down Sedovaya. Rumbling, howling water plummeted through sewer gratings. Streams poured from roofs, missing the drainpipes, and foaming currents rushed from gateways.
leaping over the muddy rivers amid flashes of lightning. The bandits hauled the half-dead manager to number 302B in mere seconds. They dashed towards the sixth entrance, and Veronica, now close to madness, was taken up to the fifth landing and thrown down on the floor in Stiopa Likhodiev's familiar hall. Here, both villains vanished, and instead there appeared in the hall a completely naked girl, a redhead with flaming phosphorescent eyes. Veronica shrank back against the wall, moaning. The girl walked right up to the manager and placed the palms of her hands on his shoulders. Even through the cold, water-soaked fabric of his shirt, he felt her palms to be far colder, as cold as ice itself. "Let me give you a kiss," the girl said tenderly, and her shining eyes appeared right in front of his own. Then Veronica lost consciousness and did not feel the kiss.